Oh my gosh, we got a lot going on today, from Washington's Tom Wilson's hit and his non-hearing by the NHL Player Safety Committee. Jeff Skinner is on fire in Buffalo, and did I ever ruffle up some feathers with an article. William Nylander signs in Toronto and the dominoes that will have on his team. The Oilers have a new head coach and a very, very special guest you do not want to miss. All this on the premiere episode of the Hockey Writers Podcast.
In. Toe drags, gorgeous! He scores! Alex Ovechkin, dang-a-licious!
There are times you wondered whether or not you'd be pulling on a Leaf jersey this year?
To me, I always wanted to be here, and that was not a question for me throughout the entire process. It was a long negotiation to get to where both sides were happy.
Well, that was William Nylander of the Toronto Maple Leafs in his first media conference after signing with the team. Welcome, everybody, to the Hockey Writers Podcast, the very first Hockey Writers Podcast. We've got all sorts of fun stuff happening here. We're going to be talking to special guests. We're going to be talking to our writers from thehockeywriters.com. We're going to have some fun features that we're going to add to this podcast. We're going to kick things off with the first segment that we call the 5-minute runaround in the NHL.
Hi, folks. Steven Ground here, covering the St. Louis Blues, and what a disaster this season has been for St. Louis so far. The new coach hasn't righted the ship, and now Alex Steen, Alex Pietrangelo, and the most unfortunate man in hockey, Robbie Fabbri, are all on the shelf for a while. Pietro will be particularly hard to replace, though it does give the Blues a chance to examine new leadership, with rumors swirling that they'll investigate every option in restructuring the team going forward. And promising prospect Jordan Kyrou has been called up again with a more prominent role, giving Blues fans something else to look forward to besides the 2019 draft.
Hey, it's Kyle Guype, and I cover the Nashville Predators, who are off to a great start. At the time of recording this, they're first in the Western Conference. Pekka Rinne is playing well, and they still have the league's best blue line. However, injuries to P.K. Subban, Victor Arvidsson, Kyle Turris, and Philip Forsberg have been difficult to overcome, but it has meant top prospect Elias Tolvanen has been recalled, and he scored his first NHL goal on a nifty backhander against the Blackhawks. Despite injuries, they keep winning, but if Ryan Johansson or another top four defenseman goes down, it could derail them until health improves.
This is Ryan Spohr on the Montreal Canadiens, who are barely holding on to a playoff spot. Max Domi has been producing like that elusive number one center. Their fate is still tied to how well an aging Carey Price can manage behind a patchwork defense, though. It hasn't been pretty. Will Shea Weber's return stabilize things in their own end?
Zeke here with your Sharks territory update, and there's plenty of turmoil here. A dismal road trip featured just one win and four losses, including three blowout losses. It's left the Sharks in the middle of the standings, which is clearly not good enough for perhaps the most talented Sharks team in franchise history. It's put head coach Peter DeBoer on the hot seat, and it might be the hottest seat in the entire league, and it's a league which has already seen a handful of coaches, GMs, dismissed just a third of the way into the season.
Hey, hockey fans, this is Josh Bell covering the Ottawa Senators. There's always lots to talk about in Sens Nation. Brady Tkachuk and the rookies are making a big impact so far this season. Can the team still manage to make the move downtown despite all the drama? Will Craig Anderson ever get a break? And of course, can the team re-sign Matt Duchene and Mark Stone, or will they be gone by next season?
Hey everyone, this is Matt Mastrogiovanni covering the Philadelphia Flyers. Big news out of Philly this week as the team hired Chuck Fletcher as their new general manager and brought Rick Wilson to the organization as an assistant coach too. After a few days off, the Flyers are back in action tomorrow night against the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Hi everyone, Rachel Anderson here covering the Detroit Red Wings. Inundated by injuries yet again, what rising stars will fill the gaps in the aftermath of the Mantha and DeKeyser injuries? Leading the team in points, Dylan Larkin continues to make a strong case for the captaincy. Rookies Dennis Cholowski and Michael Rasmussen are driving the youth movement, and check in on the progress of promising prospects Philip Hronek and Philip Zadina.
Hey guys, it's Drew Johnson covering the Boston Bruins for THW. The Bees are a one-line team right now and desperately need scoring from their bottom three lines. Coupling that with injuries to key pieces such as Bergeron, Chara, and McAvoy, things are not looking up in Boston as they continue to struggle in the midst of a 5-game stretch against division rivals.
Hey everybody, this is Greg Boyson covering the Chicago Blackhawks. The team is out west as they continue to try and right the ship under new head coach Jeremy Colleton. Newcomer Dylan Strom is fitting in nicely in between Patrick Kane and Alex DeBrincat. Can the team finally figure out how to stop giving up so many goals in the first 5 minutes of the game? We'll find out.
Hello, everybody. This is Eugene Helfer covering the Tampa Bay Lightning. Despite an early season injury to Andrei Vasilevskiy, the Lightning keep finding ways to win games behind backup Louis Domingue, who posted a league-leading 7 wins in November. These winning ways are due in no small part to the recent play of Nikita Kucherov, who scored 24 points over a 10-game span following Vasilevskiy's injury. With 4 players already scoring 10 goals this season, the Lightning will look to continue riding their high-powered offense until their starting goaltender returns in the near future.
Hi, this is J.D. Killian with Colorado Avalanche News. They have lots going well. McKinnon's the second star for November. Power play's best in the league. Rantanen leads the league in points. McKinnon's second. Secondary scoring is rolling. Barry returned from injury, and that's with 17 games played on the road.
This is Jason Gill covering the Vancouver Canucks, and the early season glory just continues to fade for the team, even with their 3 biggest offensive stars back in the lineup. But a little bit of excitement in 2 years' time, a rivalry with Seattle is ahead.
Hey everybody, this is Ryan Ferrazovic covering the Toronto Maple Leafs, and we have a lot to talk about in the city of Toronto. Auston Matthews returns from his shoulder injury and makes a direct impact to his team's success. Nylander watch ends as William Nylander re-signs with the Leafs and what that means for the Maple Leafs cap space moving forward. With Nylander's return, where does Kasperi Kapanen land in the lineup and what role will he be playing moving forward? Josh Levo gets traded to the Vancouver Canucks as the Maple Leafs keep their word to provide him with an opportunity.
Welcome back to the Hockey Writers Podcast. My name is Jim Parsons. If you know my work, you can see me writing rumors articles, Edmonton Oilers articles, all sorts of stuff at thehockeyraiders.com. I just want to thank all of those Raiders who put their time in to do that 5-minute NHL runaround. Obviously, we do not have time in 5 minutes to get to every single writer on the site, but as these weeks roll on, you will hear from these guys. So we're happy to have the ones that we got, and we're happy to include the others later. We're super excited about what we're going to be doing from here on in every week at the Hockey Raiders. We're going to be airing this podcast. We're going to have all sorts of fun guests on today. We're going to have Rob Saria, who covers the Edmonton Oilers. There's a ton going on in Edmonton, including a brand new coach, new system, struggles with some of the team, line shifting, potential controversy and goal. We're also going to bring on Andrew Forbes. He covers the Toronto Maple Leafs. Talk all things William Nylander, his brand new deal, what that means for the Leafs moving forward. Zeke, who covers the San Jose Sharks, the Hockey Writers. He's going to be talking a little bit about Pete DeBoer and the coaching issues in San Jose, Erik Karlsson, and how he's fitting in with the team. Finally, we'll be chatting with Jeff Seide over in Buffalo about Jeff Skinner. You'll find out that I wrote an article about Skinner, and I took a lot of heat for it. I want Jeff's opinion. I want to give him the opportunity to speak on behalf of all the Buffalo Sabres fans out there who think I'm nuts. I want to know if Jeff agrees or if he disagrees with my take. We also have a very special, very, very special guest. I was super excited to chat with him. He's a former NHL goalie and a Hall of Famer. You got to stay tuned to hear that interview. We're going to cover everything from Tom Wilson's got away with absolutely no punishment from the NHL Players Safety Committee whatsoever. I mean, I know the hit wasn't as bad as some things that Wilson has done in the past, but you have to ask the question, how does a repeat offender like Wilson get away with nothing? He absolutely did not get any single punishment. There wasn't even a hearing of any kind. So we'll talk about this and all sorts of other topics. But before we do, we're going to give you the rumors of the week.
This is J.D. Killian with the Hockey Writers Rumor Update. First up, the Philadelphia Flyers. TSN's Bob McKenzie is reporting that Flyers GM Chuck Fletcher will focus on helping the team make the playoffs this year. In order to accomplish this goal, he may consider making some, quote, reasonable moves. One move will likely involve finding a short-term fix in net. Reports are circulating that Fletcher will be going to take a look at promising goaltender prospect Carter Hart. Next up, the Maple Leafs. Now that Toronto has signed William Nylander, the front office has turned their attention to signing 2 of their key restricted free agents, Auston Matthews and Mitch Marner. Management wants to get both players signed as soon as possible. The key? Which player will sign first? As for Nylander, he will be making his season debut Thursday night against the Detroit Red Wings. Nylander has stated that Dubas promised not to trade him as long as Dubas is with the organization. Toronto faces some interesting salary cap challenges as they have 6 RFAs and 5 UFAs on expiring contracts. Will Toronto be able to keep their talented young crew together? Who knows? On to the Los Angeles Kings, where talk has emerged that goaltender Jonathan Quick may end up on the trade block near the deadline should the team sit outside of a playoff spot. The Kings have been pleased with their goaltending pipeline and with the performances of both Jack Campbell and Cal Peterson. Meanwhile, the New York Rangers may be looking to make a move of their own with alternate captain Mats Zuccarello. The New York Post reports Zuccarello fully expects to be traded before the year's end as part of the Rangers' mini-rebuild. And finally, two teams are looking to shore up their blue line. The Dallas Stars are on a prowl for defensemen as most of their starting blue liners are injured, and the Montreal Canadiens are searching for a top-pairing defenseman to play opposite Shea Weber. And that's the latest from the Hockey Writers.
So without further ado, let's get right into it. We've got Rob Soria here, helps cover the Edmonton Oilers at thehockeywriters.com. Hey, Rob, how you doing? Tom Wilson, this guy just does not seem to get it, that hit in Washington. What did you think of that? I mean, the guy isn't even going to get a hearing call. He's not going to get suspended. There's no punishment coming for that hit at all. Did you think that he should have been punished for that, or are we all just crazy and that wasn't that bad of a hit?
It's tough, right? That because when you compare it to other similar sort of things in the league, it's probably not. That said, he does have a history. I don't think he targeted anyone's head, but his history says something that can't be ignored. The one thing I really didn't like about the play is it's not like it came out of the blue. He saw what was going on. He could have very easily stepped aside and avoided the player, but instead, what does he do? He, you know, goes directly in. And the one thing that really bothers me with the NHL, and it has for a while now, as bad as headshots are, and they are, don't get me wrong, they seem to focus so much on headshots that they allow the hitting from behind to go aside. If that play happens up against the boards, what are we saying? So it is unfortunate, but I think a lot of it when it comes to the league, it comes down to, is someone severely hurt? And in this case, it wasn't a severe injury. Though that said, I am a little surprised they didn't do anything just because of who it was.
Should the NHL have done something because it was Tom Wilson and send a message? Or do you have to look at this hit by hit, case by case, and go, it doesn't really matter who it is. This hit wasn't bad enough for us to do anything about it.
For me, it's probably a bit of both. It should be case by case, but he does have a history. But again, that history is on a different type of play, shall we say?
Right.
Because I don't think you can go and, you know, throw the book at Tom Wilson for that hit just because of some of the other nonsense he's done over the years, right? Yeah, that's the things where it's murky, but it's the NHL's own fault that it's murky because they deal with things in such a bizarre manner. And it's not just with guys like Tom Wilson. It's anyone, right? It's funny because earlier in the year, the Oshie-Malkin hit. I know people were losing their minds that Malkin didn't get hit. And then to me, I didn't think that was that bad of a hit, because I thought Oshie turned into him, right? So right. It really, hockey's, and that's the bad thing, and I give NHL a bit of a pass on that. Hockey's very difficult when it comes to that. I know everyone slows it down and they watch it on replay, and it's like, okay, well, that's great, but you got to understand the speed at which everything is going. And that can sometimes change things. Though in this case, I think we would agree that Wilson could have easily veered to his right in that case and not touch the player at all, but like, that's just not who he is. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's my deal. I figure, you know, this guy continually seems to do this. So whether you look at it in fast forward or you look at it in slow motion, this guy seems to just be repetitively in those highlight reels, low light reels, whatever you want to call them, where he's taking a hit like that. But, you know, everybody's
got the problem, he's scoring at will.
Right.
Since he came back from his suspension, which is the crazy thing in all of this.
Okay, let's switch topics a little bit. Let's talk about the other big topic of the week, William Nylander. You can't call it a holdout, I suppose, because he didn't have a contract, but he sat out. He wanted to prove a point that he was worth what he thought he was worth. What did you think of the deal? What did you think how long it took? What's going to happen now?
I never expected him to get traded. I'm not surprised it took this long. Once, I'd say probably mid to late October hit, I would have been surprised if it didn't go close to the last minute. You know, a couple of days here or there doesn't really make a big difference in my opinion. I don't know. It's a fair enough contract. I like Nylander. He's a really good player. That said, forward wise, he's probably the fourth best forward on the Leafs. Long term, he's probably the third best forward on the Leafs. But again, Toronto did this to themselves by signing Tavares. So, it was a risk they wanted to take. And that's fine. I think he got a fair deal. I know the rumor was he's trying to get Draisaitl money, and hey, more power to him. Why wouldn't he? That's what these guys should be doing. But the deal he got, I guess it's probably a little bit more than he's probably worth at the moment. But in a year or two's time, that could definitely change, and he's certainly tradable.
Is he going to be there 2 or 3 years from now in Toronto with this deal?
That's tough to say, man. It really is, because it depends what they're going to need. At least a defenseman or two. Morgan Riley is fantastic. By the sounds of it, Jake Gardner's probably not going to re-sign. So at some point, they're going to need a defenseman. And at the end of the day, what are they going to pay those other two guys, right? And if Marner continues on the role that he is, those two should be, honestly, they could be in the McDavid-Draisaitl territory for money between those two.
Speaking of McDavid, let's get into the Oilers. How do you think the season's gone so far? I mean, they started out really well on a really hard road trip, and then they kind of crapped the bed, and they got the coach fired as a result, and now they're sort of back with Ken Hitchcock under the helm. How would you describe the Oilers' season to date?
All things considered, I'd probably say successful. I wasn't expecting much from October, to be honest with you. They shocked me that they rebounded as nicely as they did from a bit of a slow start. That said, I wasn't surprised to see the fallback lasted a little longer than I expected, that losing streak. But again, this team is pretty much what they are. Coming into the season, I looked at them as a bubbling playoff team, and that's what they are. So it's been what I expected, to be honest with you, maybe even a little bit better than I expected.
So with that in mind, did Todd McLellan deserve to be fired because of that? Was he a fall guy here? What did you think of the coaching change?
Oh, I've always said he was going to be the fall guy. You know, McLellan, I think McLellan takes a little too much heat at times. Is he a perfect coach? No. Do you question some of his moves along the years, shall we say? Probably. But I think you can say that with any coach, especially coaches that struggle. But he was a sacrificial lamb all the way, and we all knew that was going to happen. I've made it pretty clear in every article I've written over the years who should be fall guy number one, and that's the guy up top. It was unfortunate the move happened when it did, but I think they were at the point where something had to give. And a guy like Hitch probably is the perfect, I'm not sold it's going to be a one-year thing, like just this year. If they make the playoffs and make a little bit of noise, there's a possibility he might stick around for another year, but again, that depends if the GM goes.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard, but I read somewhere that there's a rumor, speculation, that Hitchcock was savvy. He worked into his deal for this 1 year that if the Oilers made the playoffs, he was going to get another year or two out of this. That'd be pretty smart if he did that, hey?
Well, I haven't heard anything confirmed. I've heard it as well. Would it shock me if Hitch did something like that? No. It wouldn't matter at all. Because let's face it, the Oilers were kind of over a barrel and there were no coaches to go out and get. Yeah, could they have gotten a Quinville? Sure. But I don't know if Mr. Cates is in any hurry to sign a guy for a minimum $6 million plus pay out McLellan for another season and a half at $3 million. Do you want an Alan Vigneault? Do you want any of those guys? I'd say no. So again, the short term perfect solution with a resume of doing what we need this guy to do is Hitch. And let's not kid ourselves, these guys have to make the playoffs. And in my opinion, in order for Shirelli to keep his job, I think the Oilers probably have to win two rounds. So Hitch might have been able, I can't see 2 years, but hey, you could maybe see him getting an extra year out of it if he gets him into the playoffs. And then a GM, if a new one comes in, they eat it for the first year. And if he does well, great. And if not, you move him then.
Well, I mean, you've not so subtly hinted at it, so let's go there. Peter Chiarelli, can he be trusted? Like, is this the guy that's going to be able to get the Oilers into the playoff if he needs to make the moves?
No. God, no. If he does anything outside of some tweaking around the edges, this whole organization should have their heads examined and they should all be let go. Sorry, that's just, you can't trust them if it's a legitimate hockey deal. If it's a side deal, a small deal, fine, potentially, that doesn't hurt them long-term, sure. But yeah, that would be about it, just tweaking. If he does anything more than that, they're crazy.
So I guess if you're talking trades, there's some rumors here with the goaltending situation. Now, people seem to be talking about the idea of moving Cam Talbot. I think it's nuts. But what's your take on the goaltending situation? I mean, Cam Talbot was supposed to be the starter coming in. Mika Koskinen has played really well after struggling a little bit in the preseason, but he's coming on pretty strong here. What would you do?
Probably keep both, because I don't think you get a lot for Talbot. If you get something that would be of value, then you look at it for sure. But, you know, am I terribly shocked by what's happened this year? A little bit, I guess, because I expected Talbot to bounce back. Am I shocked by Koskinen? No, I'm not. I made pretty clear from the moment the signing was announced, I got exactly what Chiarelli was trying to do. He tried to get a goalie for next year to be a starter on the cheap. Let's not kid ourselves. You know, there's a reason why he gave Koskinen $2.5 million. It was rumored the Islanders, I think, were 2 years at $2 million. By giving him that $2.5 million in 1 year, hey, and if Talbot struggles or anything, or maybe slides a little, Koskinen gets an opportunity, there's a chance he'll be a starter next year here. I think it was a smart play. From the Oilers' standpoint, it's kind of silly because of the extra mil and a half they might have been able to use elsewhere. But it's worked out pretty good. Koskinen's solid. I still don't think you can look at here, give him the keys. He's played, I think it was 52 games or 56 games. Can't remember off the top of my head, over the last 2 years in the KHL.
Right.
People are making it sound like, oh, just give him the keys and let him play. And I'm like, well, no. For now, for sure, I'd ride the hot hand. But you still got to, I'd say even... Talbot still has to play one out of every five, even like for the next little bit until Koskinen cools off. He's got to find his game. And these people who think he's just going to find his game in practice, that's not how it works with goaltenders. They actually need to play.
Well, you know what, Rob? I'm going to say this is good for our very first episode of the Hockey Raiders podcast. So I'm going to ask that we come back to you again, though, if we can see how Chiarelli's doing, if Chiarelli still has a job, where the Oilers are at. I'd love to have you back on.
Anytime, sir, and I appreciate the opportunity to come out on the initial podcast for the Hockey Writers. Always a pleasure.
All right, we're headed on over to San Jose now. We've got Zeke from the Hockey Writers. He's going to be with us for the next couple of minutes. Zeke, how you doing?
Great. How you doing, Jim?
I'm doing really well. Thank you very much for coming on the very first episode of the Hockey Writers podcast. I want your take, and I've been asking everybody, I want your take on the Tom Wilson hit. What do you think of the fact that he's got that reputation, he laid out that hit, and there's no suspension, no disciplinary action coming at him whatsoever?
You know, I'm not going to actually speak specifically to that hit, but I will speak to the player. I wrote an article a few years back about Rafi Torres. I said the league should ban him, not just merely suspend him. And I sort of feel like Tom Wilson is in that kind of category. There are a handful of players over time that you look at and you say they are injuring other players with deliberately irresponsible play and dangerous hits. And the league doesn't need that. The players have enough safety issues to begin with. And getting rid of Tom Wilson would be one of the best things the league could do for itself.
Is the hit not the real problem? Is the problem is actually Tom Wilson?
The problem is Tom Wilson, absolutely. The behavior is going to continue until the league puts a stop to it. And I honestly don't see a way the league's going to put a stop to it until he does something so egregious that the league has to do something. And at some point, you know, I think the league is going to have to literally kick him out of the league. He can get employment in some other hockey league, but the National Hockey League deserves better.
But let's switch gears, because we're going to talk about a guy who is absolutely unlike Tom Wilson, other than the fact that they both have some offense to their game, William Nylander. The guy just signed in Toronto, 6 years, $6.9 million. What'd you think of that deal?
I think it's a pretty good deal all around. I think by the time, you know, you get into year 3, 4, 5, the contract's going to look very reasonable. I think Nylander has tremendous offensive potential, or he has shown a tremendous offense already, actually, and more potential to come. I do think this season It's going to be very helpful to Toronto. It's going to help them get very deep into the playoffs. It's also going to give them a little bit of insurance against injuries, because Toronto has a lot of players on offense that can put the puck in the net. But we've seen already Austin Matthews has missed some games. If somebody goes out for a little while, you know, having Nylander gives them tremendous offensive depth. It's hard to see how Toronto is going to be kept from going deep in the playoffs this year. And Nylander will be a part of that.
Yeah, I don't assume they're going to do anything this year. What do you think? Do you think they'll make a move next year? I mean, obviously, Toronto's one area of weakness is probably defense. Do they move a guy like Nylander or another offensive talent for defense next year or the year after?
My sense is they'll find a way to get defensive help if they feel they need it. At this point, I'm not 100% convinced that they feel they need it. They have a tremendous offense. It's really hard to get the puck off the Maple Leafs. Once they get a hold of it, they are kind of like a vice with it. And you know, I think every team, because it's a salary cap league, is going to have some areas where they're a little more vulnerable. Toronto will be a little bit more vulnerable on defense, but I think they're going to be fine overall. It's really, again, really hard for me to see how Toronto doesn't go deep with this roster. And I think they can put the puck in the net, and if they're a little bit vulnerable on defense, I think Mike Babcock will find ways to work around it and be very effective with that.
Well, that leads me into my next question, and let's jump right into your specialty, which is the San Jose Sharks. You talk about Babcock. It kind of leads me into the question about Pete DeBoer. You wrote an article, San Jose Sharks are doing okay, they're doing fine, they could be doing better. What's your take on the situation in San Jose right now with coaching?
I think the coach is on the hot seat. I think the seat's actually really hot. I'm almost surprised that he's still with the Sharks as of today. I think if the Sharks had lost in Montreal on the last game of their road trip, that he probably would have been gone then. They have had a meeting. The team has had a meeting with the general manager since then. DeBoer has shaken up his staff responsibilities. Various coaches have gotten shuffled and put in different areas of responsibility. They've brought in Rodin Šimek to be a defenseman opposite Brent Burns into the lineup. And, you know, it seems like they're pushing some buttons, and there's a little desperation in those buttons, and there should be. This is not a team that should be a fringe playoff team, which is where they are right now. This is a team that's got enormous talent. The Sharks have had a tremendous record of success over the years. They've been in the playoffs, I think, all but one year in the last 15 years or so. So they've got a great history. They haven't won the big one, but they've got a lot of success in their past 15 years or so. And this is the most talented roster they've ever had. This shouldn't be one of those teams where you're going, they should be struggling for a playoff spot. They should be, especially in the division that they're in, this is a team that should be way up at the top, possibly even running away with it based on the talent level.
What's the weakness? I mean, they came into the season with arguably, if not the best defense, maybe Nashville, but with the best blue line in the NHL. They've got some strong forwards. What's the problem? Like, what seems to be the issue in San Jose?
There seems to be very little chemistry on this team, which is kind of shocking given how, with the exception of Erik Karlsson and Antti Suomela, who's a third, fourth line center, every other skater they had on opening night was with the team last year. So these are guys who know how to play together. Obviously, a lot of guys have been together a very long time. So they should have been able to leverage that continuity and get out to a nice, strong start. And obviously, when you bring in Erik Karlsson, you don't expect that to be a problem.
I have a question for you, and it's probably a silly question, but is that concerning? Like, Erik Karlsson came in as a trade. He does not have a contract after this year. I cannot assume that San Jose would have signed him without the expectation that they wanted him to stick around long term. Obviously, they can't talk about contract yet because of when the trade happened, but what's going to happen with Karlsson? Is this something that San Jose needs to be worried about? Is it not a big deal because it's Erik Karlsson and he'll figure it out? Like, what's the story there?
You know, this is going to be a longer answer than you were expecting. Erik Karlsson is a very complicated situation. And the more I see it, the more I get nervous. And I think the more reason Sharks fans have to be nervous, and Doug Wilson, the general manager, has to be nervous. You know, Karlsson, in his interviews, and I've seen them, I've listened to his words, read the transcripts and so forth, he describes his time in Ottawa in a very loving way. Now, not everything went well there. We all know that there have been some really difficult things that he went through there, but he really loves the environment. And I almost feel like San Jose is a rebound relationship for him. He didn't leave there happily and willingly, and he is where he is now. And I just don't know that he's connected to the area, because when I see him talk about Ottawa, it's a whole different body language. And I just go, boy, this is not a guy who I think is has fallen in love with San Jose. Now, the Sharks have had a great history with people who've come here and fallen in love with the place and wanted to stay. Joe Thornton, of course, being the most well-known, but guys like Evander Kane and so forth have, you know, said, I want to stay here. I'm not sure Eric Karlsson is that guy, and that makes me nervous. I'm not sure that his effectiveness in playing in San Jose so far is going to encourage him to want to stay in a system where, let's just say he's not supposed to be minus 11 this far into the season. He's supposed to be a guy who's making a big difference in a positive way. And so I don't know if the coach is part of the problem there. I don't know if it's defensive partner chemistry and so forth. But I just get a feeling there's, you know, he needs to be really comfortable in the environment that he's in to re-up with San Jose. And I just don't know if that's the case. I do think it's incredibly important to the Sharks because, you know, Joe Thornton is, his era is closing. And the Sharks are going to need another really great player to sort of carry a lot of the load going forward. And Karlsson is, you know, he's probably that guy. The Sharks don't have a lot of high draft picks coming up. They don't have anybody in their system which says, boy, he's going to be a great NHL player. This is a team that needs a couple of really top-tier players, and Karlsson would be ahead of the list, and so retaining him is incredibly important for the Sharks. But it's not at all clear to me that they are going to be able to do that. I think that's going to be very challenging.
What do you think is going to happen with Karlsson? Do you think he signs?
I actually don't know. I really don't know. I get a sense that you know, where you're going to sign, where you're going to spend the heart of your career and the opportunity you're going to have, that's a very personal decision. I think if it's today, if the issue had to be decided today, I think he would be like, I don't know why I'm staying here yet. I don't think he's convinced yet. Maybe that happens. The other thing I think that's important to keep in mind is the deadline is June 30th, and then on July 1st, he becomes a free agent. But in all practical sense, for the Sharks, the deadline is really probably early February, because if you're not going to be able to retain Karlsson, you have to make a decision on whether you want to trade him. And that decision probably needs to be made a few weeks before the trade deadline hits.
Now, it doesn't sound to me like any possible story could be bigger than this, but is this the biggest story in San Jose right now?
You know, it's up there. This is one of those now or never kind of years. You have the talent, you have the band together. Everything needs to start firing on all cylinders. And the fact that it isn't, I think, is making people really nervous. And I think that might be the biggest story. But Peter DeBoer on the hot seat, Eric Karlsson not necessarily fitting in with San Jose right away. I think those are all parts of the story.
Well, I'm curious to see if this continues to be the story in a month or two. So if you're cool with it, I'm going to ask you to come back on and talk about San Jose again.
Absolutely. I look forward to it.
Right on. Thank you, Zeke. I appreciate you being on the very first episode of the Hockey Raiders podcast.
Hey, thanks, Jim. Take care now.
Yeah, you bet. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're making our way over to Toronto, where we've got Andrew Forbes on from the Hockey Raiders. He's one of our writers covering the Toronto Maple Leafs. Andrew, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing really well. So you're the guy we need to talk to, I think, this week, because there's big news in Toronto and big news around the NHL. All the eyes were on William Nylander. I have asked everybody what their opinion is. I might as well ask the guy who covers Toronto on the Hockey Raiders. What did you think of the William Nylander signing?
I think it was kind of where they expected to be. You know, the Leafs, I think, were looking more around the $6 million range at the beginning of the negotiations, and Nylander was looking more in the $8 million range. So they, you know, I think they kind of met in the middle, and that's what was expected. I'm not really sure why it took so long to get it done, but that just seems to be the case, you know, with Nylander and his father had a history of holdout. So it just kind of worked out that way, but it's definitely good for the team to get him back. And it'll be interesting to see what he can do now with that new big contract.
Take, was there ever a concern that this wasn't going to get done? I mean, it was literally announced 2 minutes before the deadline on December 1st. Do you think that was a worry?
I think there was a little bit of a worry. I mean, even Nylander came out and talked to the Toronto media and said that, you know, 5 minutes before the deadline, he called Kyle Dubas and just made sure everything went through. So I think even his party was a little bit worried. But you know, obviously he's a guy that wanted to be here. Toronto wanted to get the deal done, and You know, it just came down to logistics and how long I wanted to give him and whether he wanted to get some sort of bridge contract or get that long-term stability, which he obviously got in the end. So I think there was a little bit of worry, but maybe on both ends, they knew kind of that there was a deal in place and just had to find a common ground in terms of getting what each side wanted.
Now, what do you think happens in Toronto with Nylander? Obviously, the reason for signing him is his offensive talent and where he fits in with those, you know, what was the young three and now the big four, I guess, in Toronto. What happened? Some guys filled in pretty well for him while he was out. Where does he slot?
I think you have to slot him in top six. If you're going to pay a guy this kind of money, you got to find a way to move him into that top six and utilize that offensive talent that he has. He's very much like a Nazem Kadri was early on in his career, where he's got that offensive ability and sort of lacks defensively. So I think that's something they're obviously going to work on throughout this 6-year deal, and hopefully kind of grow him as a defensive player as well as utilizing his offensive talent. But I think you got to throw him back into the top six and find that chemistry that he's had over the first couple of years and hopefully see a little bit of a progression and increase in his points per game.
Is there any concern as to what's going to happen with Kasper Kapanen? Now he filled in and did quite well. Will he just be immediately demoted? Is there concern from that point of view from Toronto?
I don't think there's necessarily concern. I think there's going to be a lot of tinkering over the next several weeks just to find where everybody fits. I mean, obviously, as you mentioned, Kapanen stepped up and he's had quite the season, and you know, he's coming up on restricted free agency as well following the season. So, you know, in his eyes, he'd like to stay in that top six role and hopefully, you know, put up a relatively good season and get paid for it. But like I said, I think you got to kind of play around with it a little bit, throw the lines in the mixer and try and see what works and where the chemistry lies.
So the fallout from all of this, what's going to happen now? Obviously, we've got Mitch Marner, Austin Matthews, you've got Jake Gardner, Kasper Kapanen is still obviously on entry level, but restricted free agent. Like you said, there's realistically not a way for Toronto to do this, is there? Like, can they possibly fit all these people in? What's the fallout from all this?
I think you're going to be seeing, you're probably going to be seeing a few moves. You know, you mentioned Kapanen, Marner, Matthews, Janssen's at the end of the year. He's a restricted free agent. Oshaganov's a restricted free agent. You got Gardner coming up on free agency. Marincin's kind of a low end guy that you can kind of let go. Ron Hainsey, there's a question there. Do you bring him back? He's 37 years old. So I mean, there's a lot of things going into, you know, what the Leafs are going to do in this offseason, and you know, it's going to come down to the two big guys, obviously, first in Matthews and Marner, and then, you know, maybe do you look at trying to get Kapanen on a team friendly deal, and Janssen, you know, obviously Janssen's not having the year he'd like. He's going into he's going to be 25 next year, so he's a guy that you maybe get on a relatively team friendly deal. But you know, you mentioned it, Gardner. What do you do with Gardner? Do you bring him back? He's making roughly $4 million right now. He's going to be due for an upgrade as well. So they've definitely got some decisions to make. But you know, maybe Gardner's a guy that they look to move down the road and try and move a few pieces to try and get a big defenseman that fits into their cap down the road.
Do you think they should be worried? I read an article this morning. Bob McKenzie said from TSN there on the Insider Trading, I think it was, that Marner and Matthews, they want to look at both of those guys right away, but neither one of them wants to sign first. Obviously, because of the fact that, you know, you get to see what the other guy does, and then you can see if he takes a deal or what do you want to do. Are we looking at the same thing all over again that happened to William Nylander? Doesn't want to take too big of a discount without knowing what the other guy's going to do? Like, is this a problem that Toronto is going to face over and over and over again with these guys because they're going to have trouble negotiating and see who takes the deal, who doesn't take the deal?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to see this with this team, you know, for the long stretch here with, you know, it's a, like I said, it's a good problem to have when you have guys like Matthews and Marner and Nylander and even Tavares. These are all young guys in their 20s. You know, you want to sign them long term and give them the money that they deserve. But I think it goes back a little bit to what Shanahan was saying, and that they have to find a way to work team friendly deals as well if they want to keep this core together. And you know, Marner, I think, is the hometown kid, right? So, you know, he's shown excitement in playing in Toronto. And while he doesn't want to kind of work on a deal throughout the season, I think he's a guy that you maybe try and get done first and see what he's willing to take. And I think you're going to find that Matthews is going to make in the Tavares range. And I think you have to lock both of them up long term. At this point, you've done it with Nylander now. So, you know, you got to give Matthews and Marner that same sort of, you know, that same sort of contract in terms of length where you're going 6, 7, or 8 years. You know, these are the guys that you want to lock up long term. Matthews is turning into quite the two-way player, as is Marner. And Marner's a possession guy. You know, you talk about analytics and those kind of metrics, and you know, Marner's that guy that's been able to kind of quarterback the power play and a good power play at that, especially with Matthews in the lineup. So I think when it comes down to it, they're going to be looking at signing Marner first, but I don't think there's any question that they're going to find a way to get Matthews done before the start of the season, probably pretty quickly after this season is done. And you'll see him probably in the range of Tavares type money.
So my final question for you here today is, what happens now with the Leafs going forward? Obviously, they're stacked, and I mean this season. They're stacked this year. Offensively, they're one of the strongest teams in the NHL, if not the strongest team in the NHL. Their defense, you know, I guess to some is still suspect. What do the Maple Leafs do this year? Nylander's now signed. They're obviously on their way towards the postseason. What do they got to do to get themselves to be, you know, from contender to favorite for the Stanley Cup?
Yeah, for sure. And I wrote an article about this not long ago about, you know, are the Leafs still contenders? Or are they pretenders right now? And I think right now they've proven me wrong anyways in showing that they can get the job done with the defense that they have. I think there's no question that defense is definitely where the question mark still lies. You mentioned it. This is a super team when it comes to offensive talent up and down the lineup. You've got three, you know, probably the deepest three in terms of centers in maybe the NHL. So, but, you know, it's going to come down to whether they can win with this core of defensemen. You know, we've seen teams win championships before with as a unit rather than with that one stud defenseman. And at the moment, I don't believe the Leafs have a stud defenseman. So if they're going to get it done, they're going to have to do it with what they have right now. Otherwise, you're going to be looking at moving a guy like Kasperi Kapanen or Connor Brown to try and pick up that that big defenseman. And you're going to be mixing it with some prospects and some picks, which, you know, the Leafs have a plethora of in terms of what they have in the system. So, you know, they might go out and make that move, but I don't foresee them making any big moves down the stretch. I think they've got kind of what they want going forward. And it's going to come down to, like I said, if they can get it done with this defense core.
Well, it'll be interesting to watch for sure. I mean, obviously all eyes are on Toronto, right? The Nylander watch was something else. So it'll be fun to see. It would be great to have you back on. I appreciate you coming on our very first episode of the Hockey Writers Podcast here. And if you would be willing, we'd love to have you back, you know, in the next few weeks.
Anytime.
All right, folks, we are now headed over to Buffalo. We've got Jeff Seide with us. I got to ask you, Jeff, how you doing first?
Good. It's good to be here.
Good.
Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. I appreciate you coming on the first episode of the Hockey Writers Podcast. Now, I have to ask you a question. I introed part of the segment on our show here today saying that I wrote an article not too long ago, Jeff Skinner, how hot and on fire he is in Buffalo. I then wrote an article suggesting that maybe the Buffalo Sabres should look at trading Jeff Skinner, and boy, oh boy, did I get some feedback on that one. I got some people who understood what I was going for, and then I got Buffalo Sabres fans who wanted to chew me out, and some people asking for my address because they're like, how could you dare trade Jeff Skinner? He's so good, and he's playing with Jack Eichel. So I wanted to bring you on the show to give you an opportunity to speak for all the Buffalo Sabres fans.
Well, there's no question. The Sabres are where they are right now, third in the Atlantic, fourth in the league because of Jeff Skinner. I mean, he's a major part of the Sabres' hopes for making the playoffs this year. Through 29 games, he's got 20 goals. That's more than the next two leading Sabre goal scorers combined. You know, he's the peanut butter to Jack Eichel's jelly. finally a guy, a top-line winger that plays and thinks the game at his speed, a 7-time 20-goal scorer, 30-time 30-goal scorer, 3-time 30-goal scorer, 26 years old. You know, you don't find players like this growing on trees. So what team in the right mind would want to get rid of him? I mean, the Sabres have watched the playoffs on television the last 7 years. They're constantly, year after year, selling the players they have for assets. Look where it's gotten them.
So is there anything to my take on this that I suggested? Okay, at the summertime, nobody seemed to want Jeff Skinner. Carolina and Skinner had agreed to move on. He was making some good money. The key for me is the guy's going to be asking for $9 to $10 million a season. I mean, can you pay him that, considering his history, considering the records of his being? I mean, he's a good scorer. I'm not going to take anything away from him. I'm not crapping on Jeff Skinner as a player, but I mean, this season is the best season he's ever had by far. It's not over yet, and he's already looking to ask for $9 to $10 million.
Well, I don't know what the numbers are going to shake out at. I mean, it's not a black or white debate whether you trade him or you sign him. You know, obviously, you got to try and sign him. I mean, Botterill, you know, he's a cap savvy guy. He's gonna try and sign him at a reasonable number. But if that climbs up, you know, north of $9 million, if he wants 7 years, eight years, that may be, you know, more than he's worth. You know, at that point, you got to start asking yourself, what would the return be for him on the market? He's got to love being close to home. It looks like he's headed to the playoffs, you know, for the first time in his career, having the career year that he has. You know, he's having fun with his teammates, seems to be getting along with everyone, something that, you know, not necessarily was the case in Carolina. I think they got to try and sign him. But if by the trade deadline, you can't let him walk for nothing. I mean, you don't want to open that Pandora's box.
I was just going to ask. I mean, that's the issue in Columbus, right? Like, are Artemi Panarin, Sergei Bobrovsky, both of these guys are unrestricted free agents. The big question in Columbus is, what happens if these guys walk for nothing? I mean, you don't want to get rid of your best players heading towards the playoffs and just completely crap the chances that you're going to have a good playoff run. But I mean, isn't that a little bit about what Buffalo's looking at here? Like, if they don't know that Skinner's going to take a decent amount of money, say $7-7.5 million, and they know it's going to be $9-10, do they just keep him, run your playoffs, try to win, and then you leave him for nothing? Or do they trade him at the deadline knowing, hey, we knew we weren't going to be able to get this done?
You know, you could make arguments for both sides. I mean, if he's not signed by the trade deadline, I got to think you pretty much know what the answer is, and you can't let him walk for nothing. You know, don't ask Sabre fans about letting players walk for nothing. They know that all too well. You know, but you know, if they're going to flip him, you know, unless you're going for a top pair D man, why would you move Skinner just to try and find a guy like Skinner? I mean, he's right, filling that. You know, he's a top six guy, or top three guy. You know, he's a scorer, and that's what the Sabres need.
Yeah. Does the value of his return go down whether they trade him now or they trade him at the deadline? Obviously, he becomes a guaranteed rental at the deadline. So if you move him now because you can get a fantastic return, I don't even know that that's out there. I just suggested the idea of it. Or do you move him at the deadline? Do you risk not getting the return, or does it matter?
I don't think the Sabres are even entertaining the idea of flipping him until, you know, February comes around. You know, they've got a boatload of picks up in the next few years. They have 4 first round picks over the next 2 years. I think 8 picks in the first 2 rounds over the next 3 years. You know, adding more picks, what good is that doing? We've lived 7 years of draft picks and not seeing the postseason.
Well, you know what? I agree with you. I wrote that article knowing that there was another side to this topic, and I know that I took some heat for my opinion, but I just wanted to suggest the idea. But I'm glad I had the chance to get you on so that you could please speak to both sides of this, but also represent some of those fans that were a little miffed at me for suggesting such a thing. But you know what? So I'm not going to get too in-depth with Buffalo with you. I just wanted to talk Skinner, but I would love to have you back on to talk way more stuff about Buffalo, because they're having a fantastic season, and it's just too good to ignore.
Yeah, I mean, coming off a 10-game win streak, the big question is, were they playing way over their talent level, way over their heads, and just getting all the lucky bounces all in one 10-game span, or are they just starting to realize their potential? I mean, they didn't really play that great in a lot of these games, and they still won. And now they're hanging tough with the, you know, the Preds and the Leafs, the Jets. You know, they could really kick it up in another gear or two. So don't count them out.
No, for sure. I think they're going to be a team to watch, and I'd love to have you back on to talk way more in depth about it when we have a little more time.
Looking forward to that.
Okay, perfect. Thanks, Jeff. We've got a very special guest with us today. He is a former NHL goaltender for the Edmonton Oilers, Toronto Maple Leafs, Buffalo Sabres, St. Louis Blues, Los Angeles Kings, Calgary Flames. He made a couple stops, but mostly known for his time with the Oilers, a 2003 Hockey Hall of Famer. He's won 5 Stanley Cups, 6 All-Star appearances. We have with us Grant Fuhr today. Grant, how are you doing today?
It's got no complaints. Life's pretty good right now.
Fantastic. So when I talked to you last, you are, I think, currently in California. You had some work done on your knee. How's everything feeling?
Actually good. Yeah, it's what, a week ago now I had knee replaced, so it's coming along good. I can't really complain so far.
Okay, good. Well, I mean, I guess if you're going to be laid up anywhere, being laid up in California is not the worst place to be.
No, it's a pretty good spot. The weather's usually pretty good. Maybe a little bit of rain today, but that happens maybe 4 days a year, so it's not so bad.
Oh, right on. So hopefully you'll get a chance to heal and get back to your golf game. Have you been golfing quite a bit? I know the last time I saw you was at a golf tournament, but how's your golf game been?
I was playing a fair amount, and then the knee kind of wore out a little bit, so the golf game suffered a little. But looking forward to the new year when the knee gets a little healthier again, and I can get back to playing a little bit.
I know there's a lot going on in your life right now. Recently, you had the broadcast premiere of your documentary, Making Coco, the Grant Fuhr story, and it just recently came out on Sportsnet in Canada. I just wanted to ask you, I'm sure you've been asked a million times about the process of making that film, but I wanted to ask you, how are you finding the reaction to the release of the film since the premiere in October, and then its Canadian release on Sportsnet earlier this week? I also heard you guys, you're working on a U.S. deal or something. How's the reaction to the documentary been?
Obviously, when you do it, you're not really sure how it's going to be accepted, what the reaction will be, but it's been nothing but positive. So, well, almost to a bit where it surprised me a little bit. I mean, you expect some negative, but it's actually been really positive, really well received. And I've got nothing but great things to say about Donnie Metz and Adam Scorgi and the work they did.
Now, I hear it's going to be on Sportsnet for folks who haven't seen it yet. It's going to be on for about 6 months. Is that right?
I believe so. I think they've got a deal where they're showing it on TV here for the next 6 months, a couple days a week or something like that. So it's getting lots of exposure, which is really nice.
Now, the story itself is quite unique in terms of the process, what you went through as a player, what you went through, you know, off the ice. I was curious, do you find or did you find that process, you know, somewhat therapeutic? Was it helpful to talk about those types of things? Would this be something that you might recommend for other NHL players, former players that maybe the story is not exactly similar, but, you know, there's always, you know, stories out there in the NHL. Would you recommend a process like this for other players?
I would if you're comfortable in your own skin. I mean, I think that's the one thing that people have to realize is you need to be comfortable with everything that's happened in your life, good, bad, the ugly, all that fun stuff. Because once it comes out, you're going to have your haters, which there's always some of those. But you're also, there is an open book. So you need to be comfortable with yourself and be comfortable with everybody around you. So yeah, in a sense, it's therapeutic, but in a sense, it's also a lot of fun to live your life a second time.
Was it, from the things that I saw, I think one of the quotes you said was, I've already lived it once, so talking about it twice is not, and I'm paraphrasing here, is not the hardest thing in the world. Did you find that to be true, or did you find that it was difficult to go through that process again?
You know, you get a bit of both. I mean, I know what the answers are at the end of the day, so that part's easy.
Right.
You know how it finishes. When you know how it finishes and everything, obviously it becomes a lot easier. But there's parts that you've forgotten about. There's parts you go through that are hard times in your life, like losing your parents, that sort of thing. That part doesn't get any easier. But at the same time, it also brings up a lot of good memories. So it's kind of it's a bit of both.
Now, I had brought it up earlier before we got on the air here, but the last time I saw you, you were at the Edmonton Petroleum Club in the Oil Country Championships golf tournament. You were not on my team. I was with Ron Lowe, and Ron Lowe is a pile of fun. I'm sure you know him. One of the things that I got a chance to witness was you were on stage after the tournament was over, and you got a chance to sit beside, you know, former and returning player Kyle Brodziak, current goaltender Cam Talbot. I'm just kind of curious what your thought is on the season so far for the Oilers. I'm not sure how much you've been watching them, but I know fans here know you. Obviously, you've been traveled in the NHL, but really your time in Edmonton is what we remember so fondly. But how do you feel about the Oilers' season thus far?
I'm still a diehard fan of the Oilers, so most people know that I still live and breathe and die Oilers, so I had a little bit of a tough start, but at the same time, there's a lot of talent, a lot of good pieces there, so a lot of it's figuring out who fits in what roles and how it's all going to work, and it takes time. I mean, I know it's easy for the people to get down on the players and such, but it takes time to build a process. I mean, yes, they had a great year 2 years ago. Last year wasn't a very good year. The team's going to fit somewhere in between the 2 years probably this year, just in a semi-knowledgeable guess. It's going to be somewhere between their great year and last year. So it's a good enough team to be a playoff team, and then once you make the playoffs, anything can happen.
I was just actually going to ask you if you thought that they, just a debate, if you thought they were a playoff team this year.
I do. I think they're a playoff team. I mean, will it be in a top four spot? That's hard to say. But definitely somewhere in 6, 7, 8 spot, they should make the West playoffs. And I think they're a team that's going to be hard to play against in the playoffs.
Especially with their new style, the new coach. What have you thought so far about the coaching change with Ken Hitchcock coming in? He's got that reputation for a little more lean on you, defensive, harder to play style. Do you think that suits the Oilers? Do you think that was a good move on their part?
I like the way it's always fun to play against Hitch's teams because you knew you had to be good. I mean, the one thing that Hitch will bring is the guys will have to compete every night. I mean, will they score as much? There's a good chance they'll still score a lot of goals, but they'll also be better in their own end. And I think that's going to be the biggest change is you're going to see a better defensive club that maybe won't take as many chances, but at the same time, they're going to win more hockey games.
And as a former goaltender yourself, with the current goaltending situation in Edmonton right now, Cam Talbot, Mikko Koskinen, do you have a take on that? I know recently there's been some debate now. Koskinen sort of seems to have won the starting role here in Edmonton. Cam Talbot had a fantastic 2015-16-17, but struggled a little bit last year, struggles a little bit this year. What's your take as a former NHL goaltender watching what's happening in Edmonton?
Well, I think goaltending just ebbs and flows. I mean, a lot of it depends on confidence, and you need to, the guys. I mean, I think the best teams we had in Edmonton, I had Andy's a partner where you're pushed all the time, and you have to have that because one guy can't be great all the time. As much as you'd like to be, it doesn't happen. So there's going to be some ups and downs. And in a perfect world, you get both guys playing great. In the normal world, sometimes one guy plays great while one guy has to find his game, but it's going to switch back and forth over the course of a year. So if you have two good goalies, then the team's way better off.
What's your take on any rumors that Edmonton might be thinking about even considering moving Cam Talbot? It sounds like you wouldn't be in favor of that, knowing that two goaltenders is better than one. Do you have an opinion there?
I just don't think it makes sense. I mean, you're going to need two guys over the course of 82 games in a playoff season. So, I mean, there's no sense putting yourself in a situation where one shot could ruin your year by getting a goalie hurt. It's better to have two, better have some insurance. It's better to have somebody to push each other. I mean, I think that's always proven to be the best way. If you have somebody to push, whether it be a 1A, 1M1, or 1A, 1B, whatever you want to call them, it's always better to have somebody to push. If you take away that push, sometimes you don't like the result you find.
And I don't know how well you know Mikko Koskinen, but do you think he's potentially a number one goalie in the NHL?
From what I've seen so far, yes. I mean, I like the way he plays. He's a big man that moves well. He seems to be very technically sound, so I haven't seen a whole lot of him, so I don't really know a whole lot of him, but from what I hear and what I've seen, he's got all the capabilities of being a starting goalie.
So it kind of leads me into a question with both of those goaltenders, Cam Talbot and Mikko Koskinen, being on contracts that end at the end of this year. If you had to play armchair GM and you said to yourself, what would I do going forward? Is there I don't want to put you on the hot seat, but is there one that you would rely on more than other? What would you think the Oilers might want to do after this season ends and those two guys are free agents?
What I'd start with is playing whoever's got the hottest hand. I mean, you play the guy that's playing the best, and you let itself work its way through the year, and then you figure it all out come summertime. But I would take advantage of two guys playing in their contract years, and hopefully they push each other and are both great. Then you have a nice dilemma at the end of the day. Those are the kind of problems you'd like to have where both guys are playing great.
Switching topics just a little bit, I don't know if you recall, and you probably don't, but back in 2016, I wrote an article about the Oilers' playoff series against the Anaheim Ducks and the penalties or lack of penalty calls by the refereeing in that situation. I wanted to bring up the idea and transfer into the idea that Connor McDavid this season seems to be getting a lack of calls by the referees. Do you find that that's a common thing for star players like McDavid? Is that just exclusively Connor McDavid and his speed and the referees? Or what's your take on something like that?
That's not really officiating interesting this year. Let's put it that way. I mean, that's the one thing about having my knee done is I've had a lot of time to sit and watch hockey. So there's just in the last week, there's just on the goalie side of it, there's been some interesting calls. I mean, the call last night in Calgary was interesting. The overtime call at Edmonton still baffles me, but that was most interesting. There was another goalie interference call the night before that that was kind of ridiculous and blatantly interesting. So just watching the games in general, you see some strange calls sometimes, and you wonder what's going on.
Do you think that's a situation that the NHL needs to take a closer look at and address, or is this something that you think will work itself out over time?
Well, I think what the NHL's doing is they're making a case for having that one guy back to protect your stars. I mean, I've always been a believer of that, that you have to have that one guy. If you look at a guy like Ryan Reeves, he can play the game, but he's also capable of protecting your stars where guys don't take liberties with him. I mean, I think you saw that in Pittsburgh when he was there. People didn't take liberties with Crosby. Since Pittsburgh got rid of him, people take liberties with Crosby. So I think the way it's being officiated right now, they're making a case to bring that for every team to have that guy around just so that your stars can be your stars and let them play the game.
Do you find that those players need to be on the same line as the player that they're protecting, or would it be just a case of having those players on the team and the shadow that they cast over the, hey, don't touch my guy sort of situation?
I don't think they have to play on the same line. They're there for a purpose. I know back in the day, guys didn't have to fight if they didn't want to. But you go over to the other team's best player and say, hey, if that doesn't stop, then guess what? I'm going to do the same to you. Well, all of a sudden, all that foolishness stops. So it's more there as a deterrent than it is anything else.
Yeah, and do you find that it's more impactful if those, I don't want to call them enforcers necessarily because maybe that's not a part of the game anymore, but if they're targeting the stars on the other team, or if they're just saying, you know what, this is going to get ugly for everybody, or it's like a little tit-for-tat situation?
Well, I think if they're targeting your stars, then those are the type of guys that make it uncomfortable for everybody. And guess what? All of a sudden that stuff stops and the game gets cleaned up. That's where I think that when they put the instigator penalty in, they took that element away a little bit, and it made it more dangerous for the players. With the instigator rule not there, then those guys could go over, whisper to somebody, and if somebody was taking liberties, you put a stop to it right away.
If I'm asking in relation to the Edmonton Oilers, my immediate thought comes up to a guy like Milan Lucic. What's your take on someone, on a player like Lucic, where he's, you know, he's sort of there to be that, enforcer, but at the same time, he's expected to produce some results offensively.
Well, I think if you look at Lucic's best years in Boston, look at having a guy like Brad Marchand. He was there as kind of a shit disturber, and Lucic got to clean it all up, but he kept Lucic in the game.
Right.
When Lucic is in the game, he's a physical presence. When he's a physical presence, good things happen around the other team's net. So I think it all goes hand in hand.
Just for the sake of time, I don't want to keep you too much longer, but if there's anything that you want to tell the fans in Edmonton right now, if there's a message you could send, what would you say?
Oh, I'd say stay patient. I mean, 82 games is a long season. There's going to be ups and downs. There's going to be some good, some bad. But at the end of the day, you only have to make the playoffs. You don't have to finish first. And the Oilers are a playoff team. So it's just a matter of staying with them and believing in them.
Grant, thank you very much for your time. Congratulations on your documentary. And another time down the road when maybe the Oilers are in or out of the playoffs, if we ever get a chance to chat with you again, I'd love to do so.
Oh, it'll be my pleasure.
Thank you very much, Grant.
And with that, we come to the end of the very first Hockey Raiders podcast. I want to take some time to thank Rob Saria from the Edmonton Oilers, Andrew Forbes from the Toronto Maple Leafs, from the San Jose Sharks, Jeff Sadie from the Buffalo Sabres, and of course, Grant Fuhr, our special guest, for all their time and information. And of course, we can't forget all the other Hockey Raiders on our site who contributed to this week's show. We will have a lot of other writers on future episodes. Thank you again for joining us. We went a little over time. We usually want to try to keep this thing just under an hour, but we had so much to pack in on the first episode that we just didn't want to cut it too short. So hopefully you'll join us next week on the show. Do check us out on our Twitter feed, The Hockey Writer. If you want to follow me directly on Twitter, you can follow me at @FansideSeats. You can message us on Facebook. You can comment on the articles you read on the site. We want you to be a part of the show each and every week. Give us some topics to talk about. Let us know who we should be reaching out to. If there's a special guest you want us to chat with, we're going to try to do that. So thank you once again for joining us in the very first episode of the Hockey Raiders podcast. See you next week.
In. Toe drags, gorgeous! He scores! Alex Ovechkin, dang-a-licious!
One-on-one with the gift, he did it!